In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stevens Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations podcast in Little Stevens Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest is Glenn Page, lead singer, guitarist, and songwriter for the UK Medway band, the Lemprise 3. Wicked Cool Records recently reissued their debut album, Chinese Burn, for the first time on vinyl, and it includes a number of bonus tracks, including our recent coolest song in the world, Dora Leah. I'll play some of that now, and afterwards, have our chat with Glenn on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stevens Underground Garage.
Here with you in Little Stevens Underground Garage, and joining me for today's coolest conversations is Glenn Page, guitarist and lead vocalist in the Lemprise 3. They're from the Medway Delta in Kent, England, and this week's coolest song in the world is Dora Leah, a bonus track off the vinyl reissue of their debut album Chinese Burn, which is available now from Wicked Cool Records. How are you, Glenn?
I'm very well, Manfred. It's good to be back.
Absolutely. You know, I was thinking... In fact, when I was looking up the last time we had spoken, it's been just over a year now. And back then, your drummer, Neil Fromo, he had COVID. Are you guys all healthy these days?
Yeah, touch wood. Everyone's 100% A-OK, fit and well, as far as I'm
Excellent.
Aware.
Excellent. Well, the debut album, Chinese Burn, that came out originally, you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, you're like 2005 on Laughing Outlaw Records. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Then I know Wicked Cool reissued in 2007. And my understanding is Laughing Outlaw is an Australian label. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. That's
well, how
correct,
did you
yeah.
wind up on Laughing Outlaw originally?
Well, I'll have to dredge my memory banks for this because it's quite a long time ago. But I seem to recall a friend of ours called Nick was in a band with a guy that used to be in another Medway band called The Dentists, called Mick Murphy. And they had a record or two out on this label, Laughing Outlaw. I think the proprietor was a fan of The Dentists. Mm-hmm. And our friend Nick kind of passed on some of our recordings that we'd done And I didn't know he'd done this, actually. And then one day I just got this kind of late night phone call from a guy in Australia saying that he was a big fan of our music and wanted to put a record out for us. And that was that. It was literally as simple as that.
Was that weird to get a call from some guy claiming to be from Australia and I love your music? You're like,
I probably would have thought it was a ruse or, you know, some kind of, you know, con, but he knew Nick, my friend, quite well.
Right.
You know, able to, you know, sort of convince me that he was genuine. He just said, I'd like to give you some money to make a record. And so I gave him my bank details. He paid me some money and off we went and recorded that first album. It was really, really interesting.
Well, did you wind up, have you ever played Australia?
Never been there. Never before. That call, never since.
That is the music business, my friend.
It's funny world, isn't it?
So it comes out. I also like this bit. He actually sent you the money before the record was made.
Yeah, he did. He literally said, "How much do you want?" And you know, I guess fortunately for him, we were. In fact, we still are, you know, working with a guy called Jim Riley and a studio called Branscombe, which has generated quite a lot of great music over the years. And Jim offers very favourable rates to people in Medway. And I think he was the guy, his name is Paul Glover, the guy from Australia. He was genuinely surprised at how cheap we were, I suppose. He was quite happy to sign the money over straight away. It was...
Jim Ranscombe. Did I say it right?
His name's Jim Riley, and his studio is called Ranscombe Studios.
Okay, Jim Riley, Ranscombe Studios. Now, did his studio recently get shut down or moved or relocated?
So the building, it's a old historic building in the cellar of this place. It's an old theatre, actually. He had his studio, and the landlord basically ousted him at fairly short notice, just before the new year turned over. So he has been out of business for a little while, but I'm pleased to report that he's now got alternative premises and he starts work next week, setting it up and getting it all ready to function. So he's hoping to be up and running in about 6 weeks' time.
Well, that's good news, because as you were mentioning, other people in the area use him, and I think that's why I'm familiar with him, are the Woggles drummer, Dan Electro, his plays with Graham and the Jailers, and
that's right.
I think they must have done stuff with
that's exactly it. So they've recorded there. Billy Childish records all of his stuff there. Lots of great music, so it's good that he's going to be back on the scene.
And so how were you first made aware of Jim? I mean, had you recorded some songs before the debut album? I mean, in other groups?
I became aware of him while we were doing the Len Price 3. So we're going back a really long time now, about 20 years. And I remember the first time we went there really clearly. So we knew Jim, or me and Neil knew Jim from way back in the 90s. He'd been in various bands and kind of around the Medway scene, and we'd heard that he had this studio set up, and at the time, you know, we were trying to kind of find our sound and a studio that seemed to kind of be on our kind of wavelength, really. And so we booked in, and it was a Thursday night, and we went in and we did two songs. So it was a song called The Last Hotel, which is on Chinese Burn, and a song called Elephant Man, which I don't know if that ever found the light of day, really. But when we recorded that, we did the session in one night, both songs, you know, recorded, mixed, mastered, all in one evening. We were so impressed with it, like the kind of sound, and working with Jim was so relaxed, and you know, we seemed to have similar sense of humor, and he, you know, had the, you know, similar musical influences and stuff. We were just really kind of blown away with it. I thought that was it, you know, that was when we kind of found our sound. So it kind of made sense then that we went back to record more songs. So we recorded a handful of songs, maybe like six or seven songs. We had a kind of an EP at the time, which we just burnt onto CDs ourselves and were selling them at gigs.
Yeah.
And it was one of those that made its way out to Paul Glover in Australia and kind of got us this deal. So we went back and recorded a few more songs. And I think we may have re-recorded maybe one or two songs mm-hmm. that we'd done there previously. And that became the album.
So it's 18 years old. Are you still happy overall with how it came out, or what would you do differently?
Well, I think there are things that, you know, you always look back and think, oh, we could have done that better, or that song could have been a better performance, or, you know, could have done something different with this song or whatever. I think that's always the case, whatever you kind of record. But overall, you know, I'm quite pleased with it. You know, it's sort of something we did, which was a kind of a record of our, you know, the first phase of what we did, really. It was kind of, you know, the songs that kind of got us to a point where we thought, this is what we are, this is how we sound. And listening back, you know, I don't really kind of spend any time listening to our records, but I did give the, you know, the sort of the newly mastered tracks a run through when we got the kind of test pressings and things.
Right.
And I was pleasantly surprised at kind of, you know, how well it sort of stood up, you know. I mean, particularly Last Hotel, I think I've got, you know, got very fond memories of recording that. So yeah, overall pleased.
You know, I was thinking about, as you were answering the question, I was thinking about myself in that question, when, now that we've had anything reissue, but, you know, listening, being forced to, for some reason, to hear an older record of our own. Yeah. And then recalling, like, the studio or the mixing process or something about it, like, oh, you know, that, you know, that was that thing that we was really fucking, it was really irritating me about whatever that song was. And then hearing it after such an expanse of time, oh, that sounds fine. You know, that was no big deal at all. You know, why was I so wound up about that? That sounds perfectly fine, you know.
Yeah.
Just the, the patina that settles, the patina added by time seems to sort of ameliorate those things, you know, sort of takes the edge off, and you know, then you're not quite in the middle of it, and it's like, no, that's fine, man, that's fine, it's rock and roll, you know.
Yeah, can definitely relate to that.
Yeah. This week's coolest song in the world, Dora Leah, it's one of four bonus cuts on the vinyl reissue of the album, right? Which I guess we should point out that when the Laughing Outlaw released it, it was just on a CD, right? So there was vinyl. There was no vinyl before. Now there is vinyl on a Wicked Cool Records. So there's Dora Leah, and the other bonus tracks are 10 Ton Love, Break Your Neck, and Bad Eye. Now, after the album came out, did you ever wish, you know, maybe we should have had one of those songs on there and not one of the ones that made the cut initially?
I think the only one we really kind of consciously thought had that thought about was Dora Leah, because Dora Leah was a song that we recorded as a B-side for a single. So this was the first thing that we ever did that kind of came out on a label.
Mm-hmm.
It was Christian in the Desert, which is the opening track on the Chinese Burn album. And it had also Amsterdam, which is another track from that album. And we recorded this song Dora Leah as the, you know, sort of, you know, AN other tracks put on. And it was, you know, when I wrote it, it was a bit of a throwaway at the time, but it really became kind of quite a live favourite. We really sort of enjoyed playing it. And, you know, it's quite a rocking kind of tune. And also, a very Medway thing, I suppose, you know, there was a sort of slightly comic dimension in that the name Dora Leah lent itself to all kinds of other unsavoury words, such as diarrhea or gonorrhea. Which, you know, sometimes we throw in just to liven things up and see if people were listening. So anyway, we recorded that, and that was it. It was just on this single. It was a very limited run. I don't know, you know, like a few hundred copies or something. And then we kind of thought that was it, kind of lost to the, you know, lost in time. But we quite, as we kind of, you know, moved on, a bit, you know, through the years, kind of felt a bit like, yeah, it would have been nice to have that out there, you know, slightly, you know, more broadly. So it's great that Wicked Cool have kind of, you know, brought it out of the vaults, and it's, you know, kind of available again.
Well, good.
You know, on a vinyl format. So yeah, really pleased, with, you know, to get that one out there.
And so I think I heard you correctly. So you did play that track out live when it was part of the single thing. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a period in sort of you know, I guess sort of 2005 through to 2007, where it was, you know, that was a real like mainstay of the set, you know, it was like, you know, along with most of the songs on Chinese Burn. But yeah, that was a regular. And, you know, it's always been in and out of the set. I think, you know, in recent times, we've still been playing it, although maybe not quite as often.
How do you deal with the guy that comes up at a show and quite honestly, they're expressing, you know, some song of yours that they think is really great, right? This is the song. Oh, this is my favorite song, guys. And they might even have a story associated with where they heard it, how they heard it, or how their life was messed up and how this, you know, helped them get through it. Maybe not that excessive, but still it has some meaning to them. And there, of course, the thing's going to follow is, can you play it? And on your end, you know, you haven't played that song in like many years and you never really played it very often. You may never have played it. It may have just been something that was on an album. How do you deal with that guy?
Well, the first thing is I'm always, you know, very, very humbled by that experience. And that has happened a few times. I mean, I'm still, even now, you know, sort of 20 years down the line, I'm still amazed when, you know, I find out that people, you know, in another town or, you know, another country or another continent have made the effort to kind of listen to some of our stuff. And then even more amazed when it actually means something to them and they, you know, they like it. I still find that very humbling. And it's, you know, perhaps, you know, one of the best things, if not the best thing about kind of doing this. So when it happens, I suppose I handle it firstly with expressing my gratitude to them for kind of listening and kind of, you know, giving us the time of day. And then if it's sort of conceivable we could play the song, we will always play it, you know. There is a sort of threshold. I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, some songs, if you've played them regularly enough, but you haven't played them perhaps in the last, you know, couple of years or something, you can normally get away with it. If it's a song you've never played, you know, as you said, it's like one that's on an album and maybe you kind of tossed away and kind of forgotten about, probably wouldn't do that, mainly because I wouldn't be able to remember the words. That would be the main problem for me. But I always then sort of will say something like, you know, thank you very much. Is there another one we can play for you? And next time you come along, I promise we'll work, you know, that song up and play that for you. But unfortunately, and with regret, won't be able to play it this evening. So, you know, we'll always try and sweeten it up.
Expertly handled there, Mr. Page. So I was going to ask, so there was one more thing about Duralia. I was wondering about, so it's got this kind of rhythm thing, guitar bass thing that reminds me of like Gene Vincent's Bird Doggin, or maybe this is Larry and the Loafers song, Let's Go to the Beach. Mm-hmm. Do you recall musically how Duralia came together?
I'm not sure that I do. I remember the context for why writing a song about this particular topic, because the story is that I was reading a magazine article about an artist, a Welsh artist from the sort of end of the 19th century, first half of the 20th century, called Augustus John. Mm-hmm. And his kind of muse, art, model, lover, common law wife, called Duralia McNeil. And it was quite an intense story, and in this article there was this kind of self-portrait that John had done, and it looked like his head was on fire with this kind of passion, and that was the thing that kind of inspired the song. In terms of what I was listening to at the time that kind of gave it its kind of musical drive, I guess it was that at that time I was very much in that kind of Nuggets kind of psych rock, kind of the, I suppose the Seeds, maybe maybe the Shadows of Night, those kind of.
Oh yeah, well, it could be the Seeds. Even pushing too hard. Yeah.
So I think that was the main thing, that kind of garage punky kind of vibe.
We were talking, or you mentioned, like Break Your Neck, and we're talking about how violent songs. So no problem with people hearing that. You know, moms driving their kids off to their sports teams practices. But you were talking about Break Your Neck. I mean, there is, you're wanting to, you're saying break your neck. There's also a line in there about jumping off a bridge and dying. what inspired Break Your Neck? Who angered you?
Well, I mean, it's a funny one, but because when we did that song, We recorded it and we had a good laugh while we were doing it. I think it's just quite funny. But we didn't put it out. We didn't call it that at the same time as we did the Pictures album. And it just kind of, it didn't feel like it kind of fitted really with the rest of the material on the album. Although we did play it live a few times, which is funny, I suppose, that we did that. So anyway, it kind of got kind of cast away. But what I was thinking of there was I've been reading about an executioner called Jack Ketch, who's this sort of semi-mythical figure in sort of British history, really, is this sort of notorious executioner who apparently either did a bad job of sending people, dispatching people, or deliberately did a bad job so that people would suffer while they're being put to death. But either way, a quite an unsavory kind of character. And I don't know, it kind of appealed to my sort of dark sense of humour, really, because I was kind of thinking, here's somebody that, if the kind of historical accounts are to be believed, derive some sense of enjoyment from kind of killing people, but kind of, doing that under the kind of guidance and the authority of the law of the land. And it struck me there was a sort of a curious irony in all of that. So maybe it's a kind of commentary on the kind of, on the perils of the of capital punishment. I don't know. It's a long time ago, but that was the kind of the thinking behind it. So we recorded it, had fun, played it a few times, and then kind of forgot about it really until, we started having these conversations with Wicked Cool about the release on vinyl and some bonus tracks.
You know, it's always good to be doing something you truly love, I suppose, with regards to Mr. Executioner.
Everybody's going to have a pastime.
Yes.
Or a job.
You know, you have to love your work.
Yeah.
Goodbye, dear. Yes, yes, love. See you later. Off to work. Hardly wait to get there. So we've been focused on the reissue of Chinese Burn. And last year when we spoke, that was around the time of the release of your sixth studio album, Dip Dip Do. What are you working on another full length right now? What are you guys doing?
Well, that is a very timely question, because we've been having some conversations with Wicked Cool about doing a single, which is to tie in with some US dates that we've got in October. So we're going to be coming out to the US, what is the date? The 12th of October through to the 14th, playing in Portland, in Boston, and New York City. Some dates, full announcement we've made in due course. We're playing with a band called the Chelsea Curve from Boston and a few others. And in the conversation with Wicked Cool, we talked about putting out a single to kind of coincide with that trip. So that's what we're working on right at this very point in time. I've been writing songs in the background, so I haven't quite got a full album together yet. But I think, probably as we head into the summer, we might be looking at kind of recording an album, hopefully with Jim, if he's back up and running at Ransom Studios.
And when you say a single, we're talking about a physical single with an A side and a B side, or just a digital sort of release?
I think it's a vinyl release, but that's to be confirmed, probably.
Well, so that's a plan for October. Do you have any upcoming gigs there in the UK or elsewhere?
Yeah, we've got lots of gigs in the UK. I think we're playing in Birmingham, Brighton, London, Leeds. Sort of travelling around between now and the autumn. And then off to America in October.
Well, I saw a listing for this, I think it was a show in May, the Margate Mod 60s Festival. What is that?
Yeah. There's an organisation called the New Untouchables, which is a sort of mod type organisation, I suppose. They put on lots of gigs and sort of weekenders. There's a guy called Rob Bailey, who's the kind of the main mover and shaker in that particular group. And we've done lots of things with them over the years. Back in the day, they put on some really interesting gigs, kind of bringing the Seeds over. I think the Sonics, The thing in Margate, Margate's a kind of a seaside town on the north coast of Kent. It's got an interesting characteristic. It's quite down at heel, quite rough around the edges, but has quite a strong sort of artistic community as well.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be lots of scooters, lots of kind of 60s vibes, and we'll be in the basement of a place called Olby's making a tremendous racket on a Saturday afternoon.
Well, speaking of basements, I saw another listing somewhere, maybe on your Facebook page, saying in June you're going to play the Cavern Club.
That's right, yes.
Have you ever done that before?
Yeah, it's a festival called the International Pop Overthrow, which is run by an American guy called David Bash, and I think he puts a few of these things on. I think there's one in Los Angeles or something.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's has them all over.
Yeah, so he does one in Liverpool, and we've played that on and off for getting on for 20 years, I think. And it's always, you know, it's a kind of an easy way to get to play in the Cavern.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, we're all Beatles nuts, so it's always a pleasure. And it's always a good crowd and, you know, good vibes. So it's a pleasure to do it.
Well, we mentioned there are four bonus tracks to the vinyl reissue of Chinese Burn, and we can play another one in a moment. We'll go out with one. But first, I'd like to talk about it, and the track is Bad Eye. Can you explain what that's about?
Yeah, so that's probably the first Len Price III song. I was in a band in the 90s called The Wogans. It was just a kind of a local Medway band. Neil was in the band too. And we kind of sort of fell apart really in the late 90s, about 1999. And then I started writing some songs with a view to kind of getting something going. That was the first one I recorded with Neil. That actually was the first thing that Steve, the bass player, heard, and was the one that kind of convinced him that he wanted to kind of get in on the action. What is it about? It's about living in Medway when I was a teenager, and the sort of the there was quite a lot of violence in Medway then. And if you were a teenager, you know, young man, you were highly likely to get a beating at some point. Many of my friends got beaten up by random groups of fellas driving around in their cars looking for someone to jump on of a Saturday night. And so it was about that, really, and the kind of living in fear. And you mentioned the thing about the death. That was when I saw someone jump off a crossing, like a bridge at the top of a place called Chatham Hill. Yeah. They threw themselves to their death at the top of Chatham Hill. That was quite unpleasant. So, it's about sort of difficult stuff, really, being a young man, young adult, growing up in Medway.
Wow, that's all pretty heavy. I'm glad you were able to channel that in a song, you know, a way to deal with all that.
I've often channeled difficult stuff into songs, really. I find it's quite a nice way to deal with it, really, just to sort of put it somewhere kind of safe, you know.
Yeah.
And express yourself. It's very different to what we went on to be, you know, as a band. I mean, it's kind of, that was very, very early days, you know, before there was any kind of sniff of a record company, for example.
Right. Well, we're going to take a listen to it. So, Glenn, thanks again for chatting with me today on Our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you, Manfred. Thanks for having me along, and great to catch up with you again.
Absolutely. Well, let's give a listen now to another bonus track off of the reissued vinyl version of Chinese Burn. It's Bad Eye in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Is it my brain or is it my face? Makes you want to hurt me. And this is my town and this is the place. Paranoia won't desert me. Dance to the beat of the new imprint. Brainless and radioactive. I witness the hilltop suicide. Jump from the bridge. Yeah.
the Lempice 3. That was some of their song Bad Eye here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's Glenn Page for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Robin Taylor Zander, or RTZ, is a son of Cheap Trick's Robin Zander. And in this case, the apple did indeed fall very close to the tree. RTZ has got a debut album coming out titled The Distance, and we'll find out all about it on your next Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.